This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. A new wave of anti-Semitism has spread around the world, set off by Islamic extremism and the Middle East conflict. Many people in the Muslim world believe that a Jewish conspiracy was behind September 11th. Jewish individuals, schools, and synagogues have been attacked in parts of Europe and Africa. My guest, David Kurtzer, has studied the history of anti-Semitism. He's the author of the recent book, The Popes Against the Jews, The Vatican's Role in the Rise of Modern Anti-Semitism. He's a professor of social science, anthropology, and Italian studies at Brown University. Kurtzer says that Islamic anti-Semitism is relatively new when compared to Christian anti-Semitism. In the Middle Ages, when Jews were expelled from several European countries, many of them took refuge in Islamic countries. But the strain of anti-Semitism in the Islamic world today is informed by myths that date back to medieval Europe.
If you look at what's happening recently in the Islamic world, and particularly the Arab world, you find a rise, curiously and disturbingly, of many of the anti-Semitic ideas that really grew up in Christian Europe and had been associated with Christianity, and not only in medieval times, but unfortunately right up until the Second World War. It took really the Holocaust to cure European Christianity of these anti-Semitic views.
What's an example of one of those anti-Semitic myths that is floating around the Islamic world now that has its roots in European anti-Semitism?
Well, a good example is the ritual murder myth. This holds that Jews are somehow commanded by their religion to kidnap non-Jewish children, then torture them as painfully as possible, draw out all their blood, because this blood, according to this myth, is required by Jews for various rituals, the most commonly cited one being the use of non-Jewish children's blood for matzah, for Passover. Well, this grew up in Europe, beginning in the 1100s, and can be found, unfortunately, right into the 20th century in Christian Europe, and in fact was backed by the Vatican into the early part of the 20th century, but of course has been totally discredited as we got into the 20th century in Christian Europe, although it was used by the Nazis to considerable effect. Today, we find in the year 2002, various government-sponsored newspapers in Egypt, in Saudi Arabia, elsewhere in the Arab world, repeating this myth and charging the Jews with taking the blood of now Islamic children as well as Christian children to use for their Jewish ritual.
Now, you mentioned that current theories circulating about the Jews, particularly among some Islamist extremists, is these Jewish conspiracy theories that the Jews control the banks and the press, they're trying to control the world. Is this connected to the Protocols of the Elders of Zion? Is that do you find that writing is gaining currency again?
Yes, amazingly, this is being published apparently in scores of different editions in the Arab world today. Well, this is a forgery. It began in the turn of the 20th century in Tsarist Russia, where the Tsar's secret police came up with this fanciful tale of a worldwide Jewish conspiracy aimed at taking over the world and essentially enslaving all the non-Jews of the world. It became popular, basically became the Bible of European anti-Semitism in the 1920s, was adopted by the Nazis, but also was published by rather respectable people in Europe and in the U.S., where Henry Ford was involved in its distribution. But, of course, even by the 1920s and 1930s, was rejected by responsible Europeans. However, today it's making a reappearance in the Arab world.
You said that you found a quote from the protocols on the website of Hamas.
Well, right in the covenant of Hamas, the founding document of Hamas, it refers to the protocols of the Elders of Zion to make its case that they have evidence that the Jews not only want Israel, but they want to take over all of the Arab world as part of their quest for world domination.
In reading your book, The Popes Against the Jews, I learned a lot about the many times over the centuries in which Jews were expelled or ghettoized in countries throughout Europe. Do you think that connects to the wave of anti-Semitism in Europe that we're seeing now?
Well, there's a very long tradition of anti-Semitism in Europe, something that many Europeans essentially tried to deny. And it's not surprising that you would still find anti-Semitism in Europe, given its historical pedigree. For hundreds of years, Jews were persecuted. They were banned from living in Britain, in France, in large parts of Germany. Of course, there's the famous case of Spain and Portugal, where they were thrown out beginning in 1492 or forced to convert. And in those areas where they were allowed to exist, for example, the Papal States in central Italy with its capital Rome under the Pope's dominion, the Jews were not allowed to live in most areas, were only allowed to live in a handful of cities which had ghettos which locked them in at night. So given, and that last ghetto, of course, was Rome, which was only liberated in 1870 when forces of Italian unification took it from the Pope. So 1870 is not that long ago, really, from a historian's perspective anyway, and the legacy remains.
Now, your latest book is called The Pope Against the Jews, The Vatican's Role in the Rise of Modern Anti-Semitism. What would you say was the most extreme period in which the Vatican played a big part in anti-Semitism?
Well, my interest particularly is the rise of modern anti-Semitism. When we talk about modern anti-Semitism, we're talking about a social, political movement with its roots beginning in the 1880s. And it then ultimately goes on through the 1930s, and one wing of it would develop as Nazism. The Vatican has denied that it played any role in the rise of modern anti-Semitism, claiming a distinction between what they call anti-Judaism, which is based on religious negative views of the Jews, like Jews as the killers of Christ, and opposing that to modern anti-Semitism, which they see as based on negative economic, political, and social characterizations of the Jews. So in the Popes Against the Jews, what I try to demonstrate is that there is no, this distinction does not hold, that is, between religious anti-Judaism of a sort that the church was involved in and a economic, political, social anti-Semitism, which was responsible for the kind of hatred that could ultimately lead to the Holocaust. And so for me, the most interesting and most important period really is the period where anti-Semitism gets started in the 1880s, 1890s, and the beginning of the 20th century.
And how does anti-Semitism change its colors during that period?
Well, it begins to focus on the role of the Jews as being responsible for all the evil of modern times. You see, once the when the Jews for centuries had either been banned from much of Europe or been forced to live in ghettos, not allowed to own their own houses, their own property, and so forth, this wasn't an issue. But once the Jews were emancipated, given equal rights progressively in Europe through the 19th century, something, by the way, the Vatican always opposed, now they could become the scapegoat for all the traumas associated with the transition to modern times.
So this is where the whole Jewish conspiracy theory starts to come in, of Jews being the controlling the press and running governments and conspiring to take over the world. These more almost like secular forms of anti-Semitism, where it's not about the religion per se. It's about these other plots.
Right. In fact, one of the crucial features here is that in the past, the real enemy was the religious Jew. Whereas now, the real enemy was a secular Jew. The Jew was responsible for capitalism. The Jew was charged with being responsible for communism and for socialism and for the spread of secularism, for the desire to separate church and state, all these aspects of modern times that were being denounced by the church. And this continued in one form or another well into the 20th century.
Now, how worried are you personally, as an observer of, as a scholar of anti-Semitism, how worried are you personally about the latest waves of anti-Semitism?
Well, I am concerned, not in the United States. I mean, there is some anti-Semitism in the United States, but fortunately, it's quite peripheral, and it's not something I think we need to be terribly worried about. I mean, there's some incidents, and those need to be dealt with. But in Europe, it's quite different. And of course, in the Arab world and the Muslim world more generally, it's different still. In the Arab world, the teaching of the hatred of the Jews to young children on a mass level is something that's producing a generation after generation of those whose minds essentially are being poisoned about Jews, and of course about now in many areas of anti-Americanism is associated with anti-Semitism in parts of the Arab and Muslim world. In Europe, the situation is preoccupying when you see, for example, anti-Israeli demonstrations, which quickly turn into anti-Semitic and anti-Jewish kinds of demonstrations. And even at the highest kinds of intellectual levels, of course, recently there's been this case of the editor of these academic journals in Britain who kicked the two Israeli members of the editorial board of this journal, of these two journals, off the editorial board, saying that they bear some kind of responsibility for Nazi-like behavior because of Israel's activity with respect to the Palestinians.
Do you find that it's getting difficult to draw the distinction between anti-Israeli feelings and anti-Semitic feelings? Because a government's policy is very controversial. You could take whatever side you want to on it, and disagreeing with a government policy is very different than vilifying a whole religion.
Now, this is true, and it's an important distinction to keep in mind, that it is easy for certain defenders of Israel to try to besmirch anybody who criticizes Israeli policy as being anti-Semitic, particularly if they're not Jewish. And this can intimidate some non-Jews into criticizing Israeli policy as they think they should. On the other hand, you also have to ask, at least Jews certainly ask this question, why is it that with all the destruction, the murders, the mass murders, the violence of governments around the world that have been going on for the last decades, unfortunately, it's Israel that has become almost a single focus of European, particularly European ire. And the boycotts are aimed at Israeli academics, for example, and not academics from other countries who might be seen as engaged in more nefarious behavior than even the worst critics of Israel would accuse it of. And so there is the suspicion that this peculiar focus on Israel, the fact apparently that there have been more, for example, United Nations resolutions aimed at criticizing Israel than at all other countries in the world combined. As a Jew, one has to ask, is there some kind of basic anti-Semitism and focus on the Jews as a source of evil that's behind this?
My guest is David Kurtzer. He's the author of the book, The Popes Against the Jews, The Vatican's Role in the Rise of Modern Anti-Semitism. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is David Kurtzer. He's a professor at Brown University and author of the book, The Popes Against the Jews, The Vatican's Role in the Rise of Modern Anti-Semitism. As part of your research for this book, The Pope Against the Jews, you got access to the archive of the Central Office of the Inquisition. That archive was recently opened when you started doing research there?
That's right. And in fact, first of all, I should say the Catholic Church and the Vatican deserves tremendous credit for opening its historical archives to researchers like me. In other words, not only its own in-house kind of researchers, but to the larger scholarly world. The research for the Popes Against the Jews couldn't have been done unless the Vatican had opened its archives in this way.
I'd love to hear about some of the documents that you found from the Inquisition.
Well, one comes from the 20th century. In the very end of the 19th century, in 1899, in November, the Vatican daily newspaper, Osservatore Romano, which is still today daily newspaper of the Vatican, ran the latest in its long, decades-long series of articles on Jewish ritual murder. The actual title of the piece was Judaic Ritual Murder, charging the Jews with murdering some child to drain him of his blood. Recently is the latest case of many, many cases that were, they claim, taking place in Europe then. Well, the Archbishop of Westminster, who's the head of the Catholic Church for Britain, was upset to see this latest article and in the Vatican newspaper. And of course, he's coming from a place where Catholics themselves were a persecuted minority. So he wrote to the Pope, Leo XIII, and said, you've got to do something about this. It's embarrassing to the Catholic Church. It's embarrassing to the Vatican to be associated with this kind of medieval superstition of Jewish ritual murder. So we now know that Pope Leo XIII referred the whole matter to the Central Office of the Inquisition, which is a group of cardinals chaired actually by the Pope himself. And we can find not only their kind of official document and what they came up with 6 months later when they reached their decision, but also the notes of the coordinator, the cardinal coordinating their work. And what we find is that these cardinals not only believed in Jewish ritual murder, now we're talking about the 20th century, and they ended up in July of 1900 telling the Pope that ritual murder had been established for centuries by the Vatican as the nefarious practice of the Jews, and therefore the petition of the Archbishop of Westminster had to be denied. But the private notes by the cardinals say clearly the Archbishop of Westminster has become a dupe of the powerful Jews of London.
What years was the office of the Inquisition open between?
Well, the Inquisition began in the 1540s. It was not, by the way, initially aimed particularly at the Jews. The timing is significant here. It's during the Reformation. So it really became one of the first instruments of the Counter-Reformation, that is, countering the spread of the Protestant heresy as it was seen in the Vatican, seen in Rome. And so it aimed at trying to enforce orthodoxy. The Jews became a kind of victim by the way in that, again, the main initial object was the dealing with the Protestants.
And so when did it close?
Well, it lasted actually into the 20th century. In fact, today there is one of the congregations of the Vatican is the congregation headed by Cardinal Ratzinger to ensure orthodoxy deals with issues, for example, of excommunicating priests. And this congregation, which still is in the building of the Holy Office of the Inquisition, is the successor of the Inquisition. But by during the 20th century, the name was changed. And its mission, of course, has been changed as well. You have to realize that also there was a big difference when the Pope had control over certain territory, as he did in the Papal States, which ran from Rome up through Bologna and Ferrara in central northern Italy. The Inquisition also had police powers behind it. Well, with the end of the Papal States in 1870, with the fall of Rome, the inquisitors could no longer order the police to seize people, including seizing Jews, as they did in various circumstances. So the whole nature of the Inquisition changed then.
Your book is about the Vatican's role in the rise of anti-Semitism. What would you like to see the Catholic Church do in response to the latest waves of anti-Semitism?
Well, first of all, I'd like to see the Church come to terms with its own history and its own role in the rise of modern anti-Semitism. The current Pope, John Paul II, has, first of all, should be noted, done a great deal to increase a better understanding with other religions, including with the Jews. We remember early in his papacy, his dramatic visit to Auschwitz, also another very important visit to the synagogue of Rome, the major synagogue of Rome. Of course, more recently in the year 2000, his visit to Israel. So he's done a great deal to try to improve relations between the Catholic Church and the Jews, and he deserves credit for this. On the other hand, when these issues have come up about how his predecessors, previous popes and Vatican previously had been involved in modern anti-Semitism, he reacted initially by referring the matter to a group of cardinals who spent 11 years deliberating, doing historical research, and coming up with their report in 1998, a report that's a very important one of the Vatican called We Remember, a reflection on the Shoah, on the Holocaust. And it's in that report that the Vatican denies that it played any role in the rise of modern anti-Semitism, clinging to this distinction of anti-Judaism, simply religious negative views of the Jews that it does admit being involved in, but saying it wasn't involved in the rise of modern anti-Semitism, which it claims was linked to anti-Catholic nationalist groups. Well, so first of all, I think the Church needs to take a frank look at its past, as the Pope in fact has called on the Church to do, because it's hard to criticize what's going on in the Muslim world until one takes responsibility for one's own involvement in very similar activities in the past. That said, it would be nice to see the Catholic Church, if we focus just on the Catholic Church for the moment, in areas where anti-Semitism has been spreading, whether in Europe or in the Muslim world, to take more aggressive action in confronting it than it has.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
You're welcome.
David Kurtzer is the author of The Popes Against the Jews, The Vatican's Role in the Rise of Modern Antisemitism. He's a professor at Brown University. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.